Self-investment is not something that just happens one day. It's actually a pattern. You start doing it in small ways and it grows incrementally. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, as you start doing it, you're going to start seeing more ways you can invest and find ways to maximize your potential.
Absolutely.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Gene.
And this is Colbert.
And listen, this week we have my boy,
Alan A.B.
Listen. This week's episode, you do not want to miss, right, Kobe?
Profound. We're going to be talking about adding value, knowing your worth.
You can't get the value and your worth out of the space until you recognize that space that you're in.
So tune in right now.
Don't miss it.
We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith, Grind, and Inspire podcast.
Welcome back to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspire Podcast. I'm your host, Gene Alert.
Your co-host, Colbert Alchemist.
And listen, today, look, the last couple weeks, we've been giving you some bangers, a lot of information, a lot of value. Today, we have a very, very special guest, one of my good friends. I've seen the grind from day one. My man, Alan A.B.
Yes.
Listen, Rich Entertainment. But listen, I know him from Comedy Block. I know him from all types of different stuff. Like, this guy's been grinding for years, like, but being consistent. And today's episode, you're going to see the thread of consistent investing in yourself, like, all types of cool stuff. But listen, Alan, thank you for coming on the show.
I'm happy to be here. I feel like I'm not even on a show right now. I feel like I'm just chilling with my homie.
No, this is going to be a conversation.
It was so normal coming into this right now. I really wasn't even ready to start recording. Like, I was like, oh, shoot, we live, huh?
Yeah, we live now. We live now. Yeah. Shout out to the YouTube. Yeah, man.
Faith Grind Inspire,
man. Listen. So tell the people, where you from, man? Where you from?
Oh, man, I'm from Long Island, New York. Born in the Bronx. I'm gonna take this off the table because this is one of these.
Yeah.
All right. I'm actually from New York, man. I'm from New York, born in the Bronx, raised here in Long Island, and I'm currently in Queens, but I love doing everything in and around New York. I feel like I'm not on Issa Rae's level, but I love how she calls back to the community in a lot of her work, and I love doing the same, so yeah. I'm really all about that. But I'm from right here. I'm gonna say I'm from Long Island because this is where I was raised. But Queens, you know. Heavily lived in Queens a long time.
Long time, right?
You know, okay. Right here. I mean, you see it.
We
still here. I grew up here. This is actually the house I grew up
in. Oh, this is the house you grew up in? That's what's up, man.
It's a beautiful home, man.
Thank you. Beautiful. Where, you know, I've been saying that I told Kobe while we were doing pre-production, like, I'm scared I'm going to fall in the pool. So if you guys see me fall in the pool today, man, like, I'm not doing for clout chasing.
No, it's funny. We just got into a conversation about how this was an income producing asset for you. Talk about that a little bit, man. Especially during these social distances, especially in New York, people know that if you live in a city, you don't have much space. You got to go to Central Park. So, speak about that because that's interesting.
I'm a producer. I'm a producer by trade, right? I film and I'm in the production, but you know, during this COVID, during quarantine. You know, I feel like everybody got really creative with how they're going to make their coins. So I was just, you know, I saw that there was a huge demand for, like, pools this summer because there was no public pools open. Mm. There was no beaches that really fully open. It was, like, half capacity.
Yeah.
So I noticed there was, like, some apps. I think it's called Swimly or Swimply that I signed up for. And, you know, basically, it's almost like an Airbnb for pools. Like, for you can basically rent your pool out for hours.
Wow.
So we were, I mean, when I tell you I was shocked at how heavily booked we were this summer, every weekend we had parties, like Sweet 16s. Wow. Someone celebrated their 21st birthday back here. It was actually really convenient for the time, not just for me monetarily, but for those people because they got to enjoy the privacy of the yard. Mm. You know what I mean? They got to take in the space and really, you know, have their own privacy. Like, you don't have to go to a public pool. You could just swim with your peoples and have fun, you know, in a private space. And, you know, I was happy for it.
No, that's amazing.
Summer's over for us, I got to miss out on that boat. But I did get to enjoy the backyard. I did quarantine didn't hit me as hard as those people that are in that one bedroom apartment and have no place to go. And you got it, but it definitely, I got it, my quarantine was not as bad.
I'll tell you this, man, I had to be testing for some relationships.
I'm you didn't hear about that.
I'm happy me and my wife got some space in the crib because we were able to really make the use of it. Because it was just, you know, having some space in times like this, it means a lot. Yeah. So I know,
you know what they say, man, like. Normally, you see your family member maybe 3 hours, 2 hours for the day.
Yeah.
You know, seeing a person like 16 hours every day for 3 months.
It's a different,
you learn a lot. And you thought you knew who you're married to or who you're with. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, nah, but I'm cool with it. I'm actually, I'm happy. I think we passed the test. Like,
we're still here.
I feel like we held it down. Like, I'm not tired of my wife yet. We still, you know, we both work from home still.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of my conference calls, I'm doing a whole newsman setup with some basketball shorts and like a button. Like, you know, I got to lay loose today and put a hoodie on. Yeah. Like, I'm like Gene now. Like, Gene used to wear those suits growing up. Now I'm like, yeah, suits every day. Like, I don't do it all the time, but now, like, for these calls, you know, you gotta look the part. You can't be showing up unprepared. So.
Yo, listen to this. Like, I came here. The viewers are seeing I am with a sweater, no suit on today, but you know, because I felt like
I was looking forward to a suit.
I know you were. I knew it was going to look a little weird sitting next to the poolside with a full suit on, tie, and I knew Kobe wasn't going to come with no suit on, so I said, look, we got dress casual, right? Business casual, right? So, but listen, Alan, so you're a producer. You've been directing videos. You did photography. You were working in a marketing company. Mm. Let me ask you something. Where did this creativity come from?
Mm. Wow. You know what? I'm gonna look at my shirt. Right. It says explore. Mm. And I'm gonna keep it real. I'm gonna keep it simple because I think that's sometimes what we need to do to get to the solution. Like, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm. I had to explore a little bit. Mm. I had to take a look around and see what I like. And that's why, like you said, I got into marketing at first. I went to school for marketing. Yeah. I went to college to get into marketing. Because when I graduated high school, LeBron just got assigned to the league. And everybody in my high school at the time was hearing about, oh, my gosh, this dude just got a $90 million deal with Nike.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, what is he going to do? We're looking at other NBA athletes blow their bread. I mean, at the time, a lot of NBA athletes weren't used to getting that sort of revenue. So a lot of athletes were losing a lot of their responsibilities. And in those moments where they had a chance to change their life, they blew it because they didn't have the right team around them. Mm. So I seen that somebody young like him was able to get in the league and make such an income. I'm like, I hope he don't blow it. And I'm so happy that all these years later, almost 18 years later, LeBron didn't blow it. I'm proud of LeBron James. Yeah. But I was looking at him as a youngin' coming in, like, I'm his age. Mm. So I'm looking at him like, I hope you don't blow this opportunity because this is a big deal.
Big deal.
So I wanted to get into marketing, and I wanted to get into sports agents work because I saw that there was money in occupations like this. This is like a whole new avenue that I've really never – I thought for me at the time. Like, I was like, you know, sports marketing would be cool because, you know, we could help them learn how to, like, navigate this industry and still make more money off of their money, not lose money. Mm. And I got into marketing. I was going to college for it. I joined a marketing company as an intern, started working there in college, worked my way up to management to the point where I actually had to take some time off from school because I was doing the marketing full time. Mm. And they offered me a head position in the company. So I'm like, well, damn, am I going to stay at school and say no to this position because I can't because I got class? Or am I going to take this position because this is what I'm going to school for anyway. Exactly. I'm going to school for marketing. So let me just take this job in marketing and get in this right quick. So I took the job because I'm like, yeah, let me see how it is for real. And I hated it. Mm. And I remember, like, you know, while I was in college, there was two friends of mine that I was really cool with that, you know, they were into comedy already. They were already sort of getting their feet wet. So I was like, well, they are two people that I know I naturally laugh around all the time. Mm-hmm. So I felt like they would be perfect for doing something on camera. And, you know, they were already doing something. And I said, well, this is something I want to do. Let me link up with them. Because I wasn't really in the comedy world. So they never really reached out like, yo, Al, you should do comedy. Like, I wasn't really the comedy type.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was in business. I was switching cars up in college. Like, they knew me, like, I had a little bread early. So, you know, I was just traveling a lot and just doing young shit.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I remember, like, I linked up with them, and then we started doing what you know is Comedy Block. Yeah.
So that's how Comedy Block started.
That's how Comedy Block started.
That was it, man. Wow. It was really just I don't want to take all the credit because, like, I linked up with my friends first and said, what do y'all want to do? And we all was like, yo, that's something they wanted to do anyway. So it's just like, you know what? I feel like we have a great union here. We could do something together.
Yeah.
And it was fun, man. I actually did something fun with my friends.
Yeah.
And it ended up leading to me finding myself. So.
Because let me tell you something, Kobe. Like, during the whole COVID thing, we're, you know, cleaning up and all that stuff. And I found one of the DVDs of the Comedy Block.
Oh, wow.
Right? It's different skits. Think about, like Dave Chappelle type of thing mixed with, like, Saturday Night Live. Yeah. But, like, our version. Like, but it, you know what I'm saying? It was, like, it was funny, man. It was, like, different skits. And
How long is that going
for?
We got
in trouble for that shit, man.
You got in trouble for
it? We got in trouble for that. Like, we had
with
death
who?
Threats. Like,
oh, really?
No, I mean, and let me elaborate. It was, we had, like, the same thing he's talking about. The CD, we had, like, parodies, like Weird Al Yankovic, you know, growing up, we listened to Weird Al, you know, CDs where he did parodies of everything we liked, right? So we're students of the craft, you know, we're all students of this thing. So we all were just fans at the end of the day. So I remember just like we made a parody about eating ham off of the song Ham by Jay-Z and Kanye. And we were basically dressed in Muslim garments. I'm, you know, I grew up Christian, by the way, right? We were dressed in Muslim garments. We were going to the ham, the you know, supermarket, putting mad pork in the cart. It was just off the top, and we were just like, you know,
oh yeah, so you had the Muslim garments, and
we were just talking about a dude who was like, so he was too weak in his faith. He couldn't stay away from the pork, so it was about eating ham. So, you know, we had made it on a world star, and when I tell you, I didn't realize how fast stuff picks up when it goes on world star. Like, world star put it up. It got up to 1 million views on Worldstar. And then I realized our Comedy Block website had my phone number on it. So it had my phone number on it. It had my phone number, and it had just my phone number and email. So we saw people in the comments like, yo, word to Allah, I hope your mother catch cancer. I'm like, yo, bro, it was just a joke. We just playing. They was really on our heads. Like, yo, I started getting death threats. Swear to God. I was getting, yo, they went to my website and found the number, and it was like, yo, you think it's a joke? Like, yo, what's this?
Yeah. Wow.
It was real.
Yo, bro, when I got to show you the video. Next time you come to the crib, bro, I'm gonna show it to you.
But that's comedy,
but,
yo.
But it was,
you gotta play. You gotta play on the sensitivities.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Dave Chappelle went to the edge. You know? Like, these guys went to the edge.
And then we waited on the Hot 97 too. They played it in the Hot 97 one time. I was like, damn, it really, because again, it was because of controversy. And I was shocked that it even made it to that, because I was like, I don't see why it's that. It's us doing what we always do. So it was like, after that, you know, we died down, and, you know, I went into other things, but I really started having more fun with the cameras. Yeah. Shout out to Carl. Shout out to Carl Brown and Nick Hollywood. Yeah. Nick Carthan. Nice. I love them brothers, but I was the financier. It was like, I wasn't making that much bread. Right. So for me, you know, they would chip in too. I don't say they didn't chip in, but it was like, I was putting up a large bucket of bread, and it was expensive. Like, we were paying editors at first. Mm. These editors, there was some NYU students. Yeah. They was charging us like $500 per person, you know, to film for us. So we were paying $1,000 a day for each camera. Cause we had two cameras, because we just thinking, we don't know what we need, so we just gonna go with what they tell us they need. And they were like, all right, well, we shot it for you. They were like, do you need us to edit it too? I'm like, oh, that don't come with the $500? They were like, no. I was like, oh, okay, well.
How many years ago was this?
This was in 2009, 2010.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So then when they said, oh, we got to edit it too, I was like, oh, okay, how much does it cost to edit? Then I started paying them to edit, and I'm like, I'm here chipping in like $1,500 just to, you know, pay for production, and it's so expensive. So after a while, we stopped saying, yo, we need cameramen. I started going to DCTV.
in Manhattan, downtown. And I'm just saying this for y'all, for people looking to get into production, know what's out here. These are resources that are right here for you to use too, right?
Yeah.
DCTV is a rental house. I didn't know rental houses existed. DCTV was a rental house in Manhattan. I used to go and get rentals for like the weekend, because everybody who runs cameras knows the weekend rate is way cheaper than the daily rate. Because if I rent it for Friday, and they, you know, they give it to us, then we get it for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I would get one rate for the whole weekend, and I would just maximize it. Like, I would actually, you know, first I started renting it on a daily rate. Like, oh, okay, it's like $500. You know, it's like $250 to rent the camera rather than paying somebody $500. I was paying that same $500 that I was paying out per person for two cameras, just to rent two cameras out. And I would rent these Sony, you know, production cameras, and I would just start putting them on and focus them in and learn how to, like, I was watching them do it first, and after I watched them do it, they used to hate when I was over their shoulders, but I was paying attention, because I'm like, well, shit, I don't know how much I could pay you, man. I'm like, I'm learning this shit. I would watch them film, and I'm like, oh, word, I don't know, ISO measures, all right, cool, y'all trying to set up the focus, cool. So after I learned enough from watching them, I stopped hiring them cameramen, because it was just too much money for me. I started renting my cameras out, and I started putting two cameras on shoots, and then we started just paying somebody to edit it. And then it got, we got tired of paying the editors too. We started editing ourselves. Like, we gonna learn it. You know, we started using, like, Movie Maker. Like, we started with the simplest thing, Windows Movie Maker. And I swear to you, like, when I went into doing it that way, we were able to produce more. Because at first, we were just shooting once every few months.
Right.
And it was hard, because some of us would not really be attached to the project no more, because it was hard to keep the keep the consistency up, because it was just like, you know, it wasn't really a habit yet for us. We were still trying it out.
Right.
So once we started getting access to cameras, it was easier for us to do it more consistently.
Right.
So we would rent it out, and, you know, my brothers would chip in. You know, they would chip in what they had. I know they weren't working with a lot at the time, and I wasn't tripping on that. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, we here together, we're gonna do this, you know what I mean? So you know, they put what they had in, and I would fill in the rest. And I was just like, you know, after a while I said, you know, I'm tired of renting cameras, you know, let me go buy a camera.
That's right.
You know, and that's
invest,
where we're
gonna, you invest,
we'll start by investing in yourself.
One of the key things I'm hearing too is you didn't wait for anybody to give you anything. You guys just believed in it, and you guys invested in into your business at a young age in the beginning. So applaud to you guys.
Thank you.
So now, so you learned, so you basically, you didn't go to school for this.
Nah.
You basically learned by watching those guys at NYU pay the big bucks.
I got NYU teachers.
And you got NYU teachers. Shout out to you guys.
Shout out to NYU.
That's what they say. The true entrepreneurs, usually the average student that hires the one that has the NYU.
For real.
And that's what it's about, is just taking in the information and learning. You know, most people are just like, I'm going to sit back. But you said, hands on, like, I may not be able to pay you long term.
I paid for the lesson, too.
But you taught me so much, and I'm going to figure out how I can save more. And with that money, you're able to stretch it out a lot further.
And even that self-investment before the camera, it's a pattern, you know. That self-investment is not something that just happens one day. It's actually a pattern. You start doing it in small ways, and it grows incrementally. You know what I mean? Like, as you start doing it, you're gonna start seeing more ways you can invest and find ways to maximize your potential.
Absolutely.
You know, so I feel like us investing in them was the biggest step. Like, us investing in it, because we were trying to do it with one of these little cameras at first. I was like, nah, we gotta get people to do it. But then learning how to, I was working a 9-to-5 and just paying for that. But then once I got the camera and I was doing the comedy stuff with the camera, I was like, well, damn, you know, I'm using this for the comedy block stuff, but I could probably do something else with this camera. I could make it make more money for me and make the return on this investment. Yeah. So I started hitting up rappers. I was looking at other rappers online.
Like, so you were calling them?
I was hitting them up. I was trying to get in touch with them however I can. Wow. I didn't have no numbers. I had no connections.
Back then it was...
I wasn't connected to
MySpace.
No. MySpace. Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
That was it. And we had no real connections to nobody. I wasn't really... Like, you were my connection. I used to sneak into his events. Like, look, he had Kevin Hart at
Westbury Theater.
You could
find somebody at one of his events.
Yeah, he was like, yo, G, his video is like the best backstage video we got. I was like, yo, he spent more time with Kevin than I did.
For real, though. He put the event together, and I'm back there with Kevin on camera chilling. Yeah. We with Tony Rock cracking jokes and shit.
Yo, they in the back.
Wilson Vance.
I'm here running the front end, making sure, like, no, we don't get sued. Live Nation's big
content. You and got
he,
the good content.
And he got the good content. He still got, I was watching the video the
great
other day.
Great content.
Got the great content. Wilson Vance, Tony Rock.
But all that in mind, we really didn't have no connections. We had to just, we had to find ways in. We had to really sneak our way in. And I tell you, like, I started hitting rappers up on their social media. Like, back then, Instagram didn't exist yet.
Right.
It was about 2 or 3 years short of Instagram. So I went on Twitter. Twitter wasn't around at the time.
Yes.
So I was like, you know, let me hit up Jim Jones, man. Let me hit up Jim Jones. Cause I listen to Dipset. So being in New York,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course.
Listen to Dipset. I'm hitting up Cam, hitting up Jim. These dudes got millions of followers, bro. Yeah. So I'm looking at them like, yo, I film. Yo, I'm nice with it. Let me work with y'all. Hitting them doing a DM. No replies. They ain't answering shit. Right. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to send it again. I'm going to just keep hammering out and just trying to my law of averages, seeing how many no's I got to go through before I get a yes in here. You know, that's the faith part you see. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, having faith, not giving up because you say no. And people hear no, and then they think, oh, this ain't the dream for me. Nah, it just ain't the moment. It's probably there for you.
Right.
Keep going.
I love it.
So, yeah, I was just working through the no's, and I was like, all right, Jim ain't answering. Then I kept seeing him tweet this dude, Boss Mob Snags. Boss Mob Snags, at Boss Mob Snags. He was cracking jokes. And then I heard, and then even in the, you know, in Cam's records, he would always throw Snags' name in certain bars. And I'm like, all right. So I'm like, let me follow Boss Mob Snags and see what he's talking about. And he didn't have millions of followers like Cam and Jim. He only had like 2,000 or 3,000 followers at the time. So I'm like, oh, he might see my message a lot quicker. Let me hit him up. Let me hit the manager real quick. I hit the manager up and I say, yo, what's good? Yo,
was he the manager?
He wasn't, but he just was somebody that was in their team.
Oh, God.
But he was like somebody that was highly respected in their team at the time.
Okay.
So like, I hit him up and I said, "Yo, bro, I film. I'm nice with the camera. Let me get down with y'all. Let me come work with y'all. Yo, I'm not even trying to charge you for real. I'm like, I'm throwing everything out the boat. Like, just let me work with you because I really know this potential opportunity there. So, he hit me back. He said, "Word, all right, come to the studio. I'm like, all right, where's the studio? 28th and Broadway. She just said the corner. I'm like, all right. What time? I'm like, he gave me enough. I'm going to take what I have and run with it. He was like, 10 o'clock. I was like, say no more. There. So I told my girl at the time, I was like, yo, I'm going to the studio tonight. I think I'm meeting up with Jim Jones, but I don't know if this is really his manager. I might be getting set up. Yo, I'm going to be there at 10. If I don't call you back at 10:05, call the cops, because I might be getting set up. Because I'm there with my laptop, my cameras. I'm really trying to, I'm a geek. I'm being a geek. I'm here like, yo, I'm going to try to show him everything I got. Mind you, I don't even film videos at the time. My man Kalichi used to film. I'm not even a cameraman like that. I really just bought the shit. Like, I was just trying to get in, and I was like, yo, Cal, my man Cal was a big, he was big in the music videos at the time. And shout out to him. He has a beautiful company now doing wedding videos, and they're dope. Like, they're getting featured in magazines now and shit. Like, they're really just, they elevated.
I love that elevator.
Elevated. I went to the studio with a bunch of my man Cal's videos in the tuck. Like, yo, I'm going to show him these. And if he likes it, then I'm going to pull Cal and like, yo, bro, here's another avenue for you. Because it's like, it, you know, when the dream's big enough, you can't do it by yourself, right?
You know, so you have to leverage.
I was like, let me get some people in here that can actually do this for real. I don't want to come in here and say yes and then I can't do it.
Right.
So I have to ask somebody that actually does it. So when I came in,
dude, you went to the corner.
I went to the corner of 28th and Broadway, and I was just like, shoot, let me look for the only building with a light on, and that was the one I went to, and I was like, it has to be this one. It's like closest to the corner of 28th and Broadway, because it wasn't even at the corner. It was like off the corner. So I went to the corner of 28th and Broadway, found a building I was thinking about, buzzed, and they were like, who this? I'm like, oh, this is AB. I'm supposed to meet with Snags. And they were like, all right, come upstairs. I was like, all right. They buzzed me up. It looked dingy in the basement. It looked real ratchet in the bottom floor. It smelled like mad weed. I still didn't know if I was in the right place.
I still feel like
I'm getting set up. So then I get in the elevator, and then like my heart just finally like relaxed once I opened the doors, and it was like a plush studio. I was like, oh, all right, we're safe. We're not getting robbed tonight. So I'm in there like, I'm in. I'm here. They like, you want something to drink? I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm here trying to stay focused. I'm just happy to be there. And then like 10:30, I see I got like 5 missed calls from my wife, and I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I'm good. I'm straight. I'm here. So that's how we got in with Jim, man. Snacks had us working with his artist a few times, and then we went into working with Jim full time. And you know, I tell you right now, pause.
You skipping a lot of good stuff,
am
man.
I?
So like, so from 10 to 10:30, like. Was he there? Was, you know, like, did you see anybody that you thought you were going to see? Or was it like some other?
It was just a bunch of his cronies, you know? His cronies there. You know, this was a habit, too. It was a routine. I mean, this is a part I really want people to remember, right? Like, it's important to recognize the space you're in, right? Because every door that you go in, there's value there, and you got to find it.
Yes.
And I feel like I went in there looking for value. So I could try to, like, you know, I knew there was value there, but I learned more about myself being in there. And when I went in there, I saw a bunch of his cronies that I got really familiar with. Because every, you know, after I met up with them that night, I was like, I'm coming back here every day until, like, I get what I need out of here. Cause I can't just give up after I get there. Because you're celebrating before the finish line.
Right.
I was like, I need to come back here every day until y'all get used to seeing me. And then that's how it was. Like, I was there every day. And we started working on the Ghost of Porter album, the Beamer Benz Bentley stuff around that era. This is like, you know, a really special time. And, you know, it was just interesting because, like, I would get used to coming to the club, not coming to the club, I would get used to going to the studio after going to work every day. Because I would go to work from 9 to 5 in the mornings, and then afterwards, I would tell my man Kalichi, let's go to the studio. Because we would sit down with Jim and go over, like, business, like, you know, looking at videos and stuff we want to do for him, or, like, media, like, different graphics he might need for different things. Like, anything he needed, we were trying to help.
You met with the cronies.
Yeah.
Right? I don't like to call them cronies. You met with the other
his crew,
artists.
His crew, right? His crew.
You met with the crew. You met with, what's this? The
Snacks. Snacks, yep.
How did Jim come into it? Like, how did you have to, like, prove yourself a few times? Did you have to do videos before?
Of course. Like, we had to do a bunch of free videos for Boss Mob artists.
Okay.
It was insulting almost, because, like, they would have mad money on the table, like, yeah, we balling out here. You know, we filming this shit, like, getting tied up to the thousands of dollars they throwing around. And then afterwards, they would come pack all the equipment up, and they'd be like, listen, my brother. Yo, edit it down, and we're going to make sure we put it out there. We don't got it right now.
It's like, we don't got it right. Give me all this money. There's $1,000 right there.
Word.
Over there.
None of that money got paid out to us.
Promotional. It's promotional.
You sold me. Goes right
this
back.
This got to go back to the van.
Yo, my whole, you know how bitter my team would be on a van ride home looking at me like,
I'm like, yo, I didn't get paid. But you got to do the sacrifice.
Yeah, it was a part of the process.
I used to call it the internship.
Yeah.
We're not getting paid.
You said you changed.
I'm broke. Like, we're broke right now.
That's the change that happened.
I'm just working more and getting paid less right now. That's what changed.
He's like, yo, you know what changed? I'm tired.
Right? I don't got time for the shit no more. Exhausted. But those are my guys, man. Honestly, those are my brothers. And it's like family. You know, we bump heads and all that. But it's like, it's still love. You know what I mean? I know that at the end of the day, like, working with Jim, you know, working around his team, again, being around them all the time, they ended up getting used to us coming so much that they started having us work with Jim, because they were like, yo, Jim got a show out of town.
I get it.
You're here already. Come with us. You're here already. Being in that opportunity, you know, you got to be able to just grind it out and just stick it through sometimes. And just, I knew that being around, I was going to end up getting the gym, because I'm already in the door. So now I have to get to the right room in that building. You know what I mean? Right, so it's like, sometimes we have opportunities in front of us, but we don't want to get the patience and sit through it. We don't want to get through the whole process. We just want the you know, the progress.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, you can't get one without the other. Like, right. I know one thing I was always tell my friends, the only place you're going to see success before work is in a dictionary. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to do the work first.
I like that.
And that's the only way you're going to get there.
That's
so,
it.
You know, working around, you know, his team, they would come out to, you know, they would have me go out to shows with him, like in Connecticut, in the tri-state area. And we would always meet up at some random ass garage around the city. And, you know, that's, I wasn't even like on his team yet. So I used to have to ride in the gun with the shooters. Like, they would be in the fucking caravan, taking all the paneling out and stuff and shit in. And I'm in the car with them, like, we get pulled over. None of y'all is my boy. I'm fucked.
I'm just a camera guy.
Yeah, like, but it was, thank God nothing happened. We had safe trips. Well, right?
right?
Let me, no? Let me touch on one thing. Okay. And I got to say this before we get to Queen B, right? Uh-huh. Working with Jim, and this is just, again, recognize the space you in. I know after getting used to going to the studio every night at like 9 o'clock, I'm waking up at like 6 a.m, mm-hmm. have to be in Manhattan by like 9 a.m. for my job. I'm working 9 to 5 at this time. I'm sleeping in my car in Queens because I had to take the train back to Queens. I wasn't balling like that. I wasn't taking Long Island Railroad. I took the E train back to Hillside, slept in my car, got something to eat, hung out for like about an hour or two. And like at like 8 o'clock, I would drive to the city because that's when I would try to get to Manhattan by like 9. And then by the time 9 o'clock hit, my boy Kalichi worked at Baruch College. I used to pick him up from school, take him, make sure he don't miss a day because I don't care what you're telling me. We're going to the studio tonight. Like, so I would make sure Kalichi came with me. Like, we're going to the studio again. He's like, yo, but are we going to work today? I'm like, yo, I don't care if we work today. We got to be there so that whenever the opportunities come, we can get it. So I'm like, yo, we're going to go anyway. 9 o'clock, we in the studio every night. And it would be the same thing every day. Jim would come there. You know, they'll watch Monday Night Football, or they're playing Madden and smoking, or they're going to the club. And then they come back and their cronies would come to the club with them. And, you know, their cronies would go home. They was in the space with them every day. Mm-hmm. They wasn't using the space right. They would go to the club with Jim, come back, go home. You know, they were just happy for the moment being able to say they went to the club with Jim. And I'm like, no, I'm really trying to work. Mm-hmm. So after they came back from the club, me and Cal would be sitting there with our laptops, like, all right, so it's 1 a.m. You ready to work now? And he would be like, yeah, let's look at what you got. What's going on? And I'm like, yeah, we're trying to do this movie, right? We're trying to do a movie out of this whole album, or we're trying to do this or that, whatever the plan was. And, you know, that was sort of the routine. We got used to the routine. Mm-hmm. So after about months of this routine, it was just habit at this point. We're going to the studio. We film in Jim. We worked with Jim in some way or another. And one night we came in there and the vibes was different. People wasn't drinking and smoking. Lights were a little dimmer. And I just remember Jim being a little bit in a different mood. And I was just like, something's different tonight. You could tell something's in the air. It just didn't know what was going on. And I think this moment changed my life business-wise. Like, he came in the studio that night. Nobody was playing Madden and watching the game. And I could tell he was in a different mood. Mm-hmm. And I remember he just sat down in the couch that was in the studio. And he just looked around and he just looked at everybody. And he was like, I need everybody to get the fuck out. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him. I looked at my partner like, you don't have to tell us twice. We're going home early tonight. Pack this laptop up. Let me get my shit. Because I'm not trying to get kicked out. Like, I'm just trying to leave while he's telling us to get out. So he's telling everybody in the studio, get out. I need you to get the fuck out. So we packing our stuff up. And he's like, not y'all. You know, he puts his hand on my shoulder. He looks at me and my man like, nah, y'all good. Y'all stay. He said, if y'all don't have a reason to be here, I need y'all to get the fuck out.
Wow.
And I looked at my man like, we have a reason to be here. Mm-hmm. We have a reason to be here. Look at us. Yeah. All the cronies that was there going to the club every night, drinking and popping bottles, going home, back to the projects. They ain't make it yet.
Right.
We wasn't doing that. We was here trying to get work done. Yeah. And he knew that.
Yeah.
And I think he was in the work mode.
Mm.
And it made me realize, no matter what door you go in, realize that you're not just there because you need them. You're also there because they need you.
Mm.
And it made me realize that we're needed.
Yeah.
And before that, I didn't realize that he needed us too.
Mm.
I only saw the one way is the street. Like, I need him. And I think that's a selfish view that we all take in business in time, because we're so used to knowing what we need and what we want that we go in there and let that blind us from what we need to do to help them too. Mm. It's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street.
That's it.
It's a two-way street. So I realized at that moment that he does need us. So now it made me change the way I thought.
Mm.
Like, let me realize that you need us and learn to help you in the way that you need us now.
Mm.
Because you definitely need us, and let me make sure that we're being attentive to what you need from us so that we can get what we need from you too. Mm. And that's business.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think across the board, people realize that, like, especially when you're the one that's probably the one that's financing and putting everything out, you notice when someone just does something as simple as, like, yo, did he just take the trash out? Mm-hmm. Like, they paying attention to that. They know who's there just to be there, to fly on the wall, just to enjoy the benefits and the amenities. And they know who's actually there that wants to work. And that, what I got across from everything that you said is that you were here to work. Like, yeah. Nah, we're here to work.
Yeah.
Well, everybody goes to the club, you still here, like.
Stayed in the studio.
And he noticed that
mm-hmm.
because that's what you were there for.
Yeah.
And then you had a reason to be in a room when everybody else
yeah.
was getting kicked out because they didn't bring value.
Yeah.
They were just taking.
That's it.
Taking.
That's it. Shout out to Ash, too. He's a big mentor of mine at the time. Ash was helping me navigate things. He was the one who managed all of his digital media and all his media plans at the time. So, and Ash is still someone who's a big part of 730 and the whole Dipset family to this day.
Nice.
You know, so shout out to Harlem. Shout out to Ash, man. Big shout out to him.
Shout out to Jim. So Jim is Jim who opened Jim. Yeah. The door, his team.
Yeah, I give him credit too, man. Like, a lot of people don't give young black men these opportunities.
Yeah.
We got to go do Harvard and NYU like these guys did that helped me at first.
Right.
And we don't get those alley-oops all the time. So for people like Jim, I salute you because yeah. you know, for brothers like myself, you helped us make a way for ourselves. You know what I'm saying? We didn't really get everybody to give us chances. And even though I had to go through snags, you still had the okay to make it for others like myself to come and get some work in.
That's true. Mm.
You can't get better unless you do it. Exactly. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that so much.
No, that's a great story, man. Like, yeah. you know, the resilience, the consistency, mm-hmm. the persistence, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Like, all of that stuff. And then the focus, because you were young.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was only 21 at the time.
You were 21 wow. at the time. So you could have got caught up in the, well, if all 30, because we did a party for Jim Jones mm-hmm. and at Cheetah.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't roll like five people.
Nah, they roll deep.
They roll deep.
yeah,
we used to they roll, brought a whole club with
deep.
Them.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean. And they were like, "Yo, we're all coming in." And I was like, "But there's
everywhere."
Yeah, bro. So, I remember down the block from Justin's, man. Like mm-hmm. they had a party. We had a party. It was Jim Jones, Juel Santana, Cam. Mm-hmm. They were all there.
Yeah.
And it was like a million of them.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I can imagine how the studio was.
Oh yeah.
Right.
It was always crowded.
And so for you to not get caught up in that, you know what, man, tonight, let's just go to the club with them and just, you know, hang out. Nah. You were like, no, we have to stay on focus. We have mm-hmm. to stay on course.
Yeah.
Because you knew what the vision was yeah. in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I applaud you for that.
Thank you. Because my man was trying to be a big, like, he was trying to be a huge, like, video producer. And yeah. I was like, bro, let's work with these artists that get the videos on a level that our work can be seen.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. so it's like about, it's really about us, but it's like, we got to do it for them, too. It's two ways. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Reciprocity is important.
So from there you went from working with him, then you worked with, the next thing I saw was Lil' Kim, right?
Yeah. I came in at a good time because I was really helpful in trying to help navigate this whole new digital era.
So you reached really out to big. Her via Twitter too?
Let me explain. I don't want to say it was that easy.
Oh,
it
wasn't okay.
Twitter, unfortunately, I didn't go that route with her. I actually, you know, again, still trying to maximize the value of my camera. I'm working mad jobs. Like, you know, I left my marketing company because I was tired of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I took a clerical job making less money, but mm-hmm. it was just, I was happier though.
Yeah.
I was happier because I was doing stuff I wanted to do afterward.
Freedom. Yeah, the freedom.
Yeah, my freedom. I was able to get more sleep because that marketing job took everything from me. A manager mm-hmm. position, I couldn't think about anything else but the job. You know, so sometimes we'll be locked in to the money itself and not anything else.
Right.
Like, the money was cool, but the opportunity sucked.
Right.
So I took a clerical position. I started doing, like, again, working with Jim, and then I was using my camera to make extra money. I was actually a cameraman in the clubs. I used to start doing jobs for like 7 days, seven nights,
okay,
and all those like janky ass like night spots websites. I don't know these names no more.
Yeah, what's popping?
What's popping? Shout out to What's Popping.
Yeah, shout out to Pete, man. Shout out to Pete.
What's Popping? All it off. Yeah,
but I never worked with Pete directly. But you know, he's a friend of friends, so I knew him. But I used to work for some of these promoters, I guess you would say. And it was just ways for me to make some extra change. And they paid me shitty. Yeah. Like, I would get like $25 a night just to come take pictures in the club.
Yeah.
I hated it. I hated going to the club after doing it. I was literally one of those paparazzi ass cameramen that was in the club while people were getting drunk. Like, yo, you and your friends get together. Let's get a picture of you guys. Hey, go to 7 days, seven nights, and you know, look for your picture. And I realized these guys are getting mad emails off of that and selling them shits. But that's another business.
Yeah.
But like, I was just taking pictures, right? So I was just going to the club every night. Like, like club M2 Element, whatever club was popping like Cheetah, whatever club was popping at the time. Marston Greenhouse, all them joints.
That was when I was deep in the promoting. I was a promoter in it, so I know that was
you know the spots. Was spot. Yeah. Was crazy. So I was one of those cameramen that used to be in the club taking pictures with everybody while they party. And it made me hate going to the club, but it was perfect because I didn't need it. I needed to work. So I was actually in the club every night taking pictures. And then from being in the club every night, you know, again, recognizing the space you're in, you got to know where you're at so you can know how to get the value out of it. You know, working with Jim made me realize the space I was in, and not only that, realizing what I'm bringing to the table. So I'm in a club every night with a bunch of DJs. So at the end of the day, I'm in here with potential. You got Funk Flex in here spinning every week. You got Bobby Trends in here spinning every week. Look, I started getting cool with them, like, yo, let me work with you, bro. I'm in here cracking jokes, making them laugh. And just because you get an opportunity doesn't mean you can't develop a fake business opportunity, which is like some people try to fake relationships and it ends up turning people away because it's like, I know we're not cool like that. So now you're making me not want to fuck with you. Like, I didn't really want to be that guy that's just trying to be friends just to get opportunity from you. I had to be genuine with you first. I never really just came right out with it. Like, I would just get cool with them at first, and then we got to the club every night and we would start getting really familiar with each other. And it was like, it went from that to, yo, I got a party next week, I need you to come take pictures. So then it came from that to, yo, I need you to take some film for me. I need you to film for me. And then from that, you know, I started working with DJ Bobby Trends. And, you know, he had me, like, doing his Fame and Fortune Friday parties.
Those are my guys, man.
This is literally DJ Magic calling me right now. We about to close this deal. I swear to you. Hold on. DJ Magic.
This is the grind. This is the Faith, the grind.
Yo, I got DJ Magic on the phone. DJ Magic, shout out to the Faith Grind Inspire podcast. I'm a guest on the podcast right now.
What's good?
What's up? I'm telling them about catching the vibe and all the opportunities we got on the table right now.
Man, we about to go crazy.
That's it.
Congratulations, my dude.
We live. So this is great content.
Yo,
we just praying right now. Everything goes.
Today's a good day, Magic. We gonna talk when I get out of here.
All right, call me because I'm looking for the Safari one. I can't. That's the only one I can't find. But everything else I got.
All right, you got the Young M.A. one and everything.
I got Conscience. I got Cranium. I got all that stuff.
All right, I'm gonna call you when we done here.
All right, do your thing, bro.
All right. Cool. Oh, sorry about that.
No, that's great.
That was like a Joe Budden's
moment. Yeah.
For real. Because we're going to get into that. That sounds like a major deal.
So working with them, I had Bobby Trends, Fame and Fortune Friday, to the point where
that's the one he did Star. Him and Star.
Him and Star. And they used to have rappers like Tyga come and do, DJ Khaled, like mad rappers, French and all these people come and do every Friday. So it came to the point where I used to just try to find ways to make it doper. So I was like, yo, Bobby, I made a highlight of all the artists that came through here. Let's put it on the DVD in the club and make it pop. So he was like, yeah, put that shit on. I used to have Rich Entertainment in the big ass bold letters on all the camera, every TV in the club. Every single TV in the club had Rich Entertainment on that shit. And Bobby was just happy to have his videos playing with him and rappers on that shit.
Once again, you're bringing value. I think one thing that you tend to overlook is a personality. You have a good personality.
Thank you. Easy
to be friendship, open up to, and it's not fake.
It's genuine,
authentic spirit. People realize when it's fake and forced.
Absolutely.
And you can smell it from a mile away. Like someone's coming for an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
He doesn't force himself on you.
Not at all.
Which is dope.
So that's now, going from there, right, when you're working with these DJs, a lot of them wasn't like, yo, Alan, I need you to come. They'd be like, yo, Alan, take my manager's number. So the manager would hit me up, like, well, Alan, yeah, Bobby Trent needs you for next Friday too. Or, yo, Absolute, DJ Absolute needs you for next weekend. Or, yo, whoever, Flex needs you for this weekend. And I'm like, all right, cool. Where do you want me to meet him? Just meet us at the studio or meet us at the station. I'm like, oh, I'm getting over to the station now. Yeah. I'm getting near the station. I'm working around the Hot 97 areas now. I'm like, I'm getting closer to where I want to be now.
Yeah.
So now I'm making $25 a night. I'm making shit.
Yeah.
I'm getting paid chump change. I can make $100 in like 4 days of work, hard work too. I'm working like 3 hours every night in the club,
right?
Just to make $100 after 4 days. It wasn't really much, especially for what I was doing.
Absolutely.
But the opportunity was worth more than I could pay for it. So I was like,
internship, man.
Their manager started hitting me up, like, yeah, we need you to come out and work with us. And then it went from me getting hit up for them, but not only that, their managers got other clients they represent. So that's how I got to Little Kim. DJ Absolute was one of my clients. He used to work for BET at the time. He used to spin on 106 in Park, and I used to go up there with him sometimes. I filmed, like, I just put up a throwback we had. I filmed J. Cole, like, with one of his, like, one of his art, not knowing who J. Cole was going to be, like, years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. But I used to go around with him all the time, and his manager hit me up, like, yo, she manages Little Kim as well. She said, yo, Little Kim, you know, it's like the middle of March. It's like Sunday night, 12 o'clock in the morning. I'm in bed, and I get a hit up from my friend Sonya. Shout out to Sonya. She's a blessing. My friend Sonya hits me up like, yeah, you know, Kim needs a cameraman. And I'm like, okay. When does she want me to come out? And, like, when can I send her my work? Because I'm thinking of 2010 now. Like, we're in a place where we can email our clips and our highlights, right? So she's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, here's my YouTube reel. Let me send it to her. She's like, nah, she's not going to watch that. I said, oh. Like, whoa. All right, what day you want me to come meet her? She's like, we're in the city right now. Like, I was like, it's like 30 degrees outside. I'm in my bed right now, warm. She's like, yeah, well, she's doing rehearsals right now, so you might want to come out and just, you know, be here, because she's actually looking at footage and she needs a cameraman for a show on Friday. So I was like, damn. All right, let me just grin and bear it. Let me put my shoes on. Let me get out of my bed and go. I go to the city, and Kim is rehearsing, and she's got all these cameramen that I'm used to seeing now in the clubs, because I'm in the clubs every night. So I be seeing all the popular cameramen, like, you know, Johnny Nunez and all these other people out here with their cameras, and I'm like, oh, I'm fucked. I have no chance. Because they're all way more advanced than me. I'm not even that nice yet. I was here promoting my man's music videos to get us in the opportunities and shit. I'm still getting better at camera work, but I'm not there yet. I'm just doing comedy block footage for now. So, you know, my homegirl, I'm, keep in mind, I have all the highlights from the club. So I kept that, and I brought an iPad just like what you have right here, right? So I go there. I'm like, well, for me getting out of my bed, I'm not bringing my laptop. I'm being bougie, because I'm acting like I'm mad I had to get out of bed at 12 in the morning. So I'm being a little bougie. I'm not going to lie. So I go there with my laptop. I go there with my iPad. I'm like, I'm not bringing a whole laptop and camera and all that shit. I'm not doing all that tonight, thinking that was going to impress them. You'd be surprised. I showed up. Waited till she was done rehearsal, and I showed her this highlight reel I made of all these artists that came to Bobby Trent's parties and all these other rappers' parties. And she saw all these artists and just thought, this shit is dope. She sees Tyga and all these other rappers that's popping at the time, and Drake and all these people, and she's like, I want my shit to look like that. That's the type of shit I need. And she's like, and you got this shit on the iPad? It's nice and easy for me to see it? That's what I'm talking about. Like, this is actually easy. You didn't have to open up a whole hard drive. She liked the I thought I was being bougie, and she liked the simplicity of me coming with an iPad, because it was so easy to get to everything. So she loved it, and she said, yo, see, we just need something that's quick.
Technology people.
You never know what's going to impress people. So I was like, yeah, I guess, like, you know, it's my mom's iPad, it wasn't even mine.
shout out to mom.
She had a big show that weekend. I think it was Madison Square Garden or something like that, and I filmed it for her, and I was just everywhere. Like, I was in the crowd, I was jumping off the crowd, jumping out the crowd onto the stage, getting footage of her filming on her on the stage. I was running backstage, getting footage of her backstage. I was getting footage of everybody else's room backstage, Missy and Eve and all these people that was there. I was running everywhere like I had four people with me. I was by myself. And I was in everything. I was capturing everything. So I was so on it. Every day, I'm like, so let me backtrack, right? Going through this whole process, right? After I went to rehearsals and she said, I want you to work with me, my homegirl was like, come to rehearsals. Every week, every day this week, we have rehearsals until the show. So Sunday night, keep in mind, I went through every rehearsal from Monday through Friday to the point where she was like, Alan, come take a picture. French came to rehearsals. Take a picture. Alan. She's getting used to saying my name. Remember some of my names, right? She getting used to saying my name, and that's a part of familiarity. Like, I hope I said that right. But getting familiar with someone, you know, that develops some sort of a closeness a little bit, right? So after a while, I'm like, you know, I'm in here. I'm in her sound checks every day, getting ready for her show. And I'm hearing everybody like, yo, this tour about to be lit. Yo, we about to have fun when we get to California. I can't wait till we get to Las Vegas. Oh, I can't wait till we get to Miami. I'm like, Vegas?
Miami?
I'm just doing the fucking Manhattan show? I need to get on there. I'm like, that's where I need to be.
I need to be out there.
That's where I need to be.
I need to be out there a week or two.
So I was like, shit. As soon as the show over on Friday, I go home and I edit that bitch. And I had mad footage. I edited that shit out by the morning. Sent it to her in the email. I said, yo, I got the video ready for you. She's like, yo, you're quick. She's like, yo, this shit is fire. She put that shit on her YouTube.
Wow.
She said, yo, this shit is fire. I said, yo, Kim, you see how we did that show? And we had the footage ready for you the next day.
We know where this is going.
And I was like, yo, I think you should let me come on the road with y'all, because we could do this in every city and help promote the tour.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yo, that's value. I'm not going to lie. I was keeping
adding
it
value.
And
man,
I was keeping it G with her. I wasn't even trying to cap on this part. I was like, yo, Kim, your YouTube is a little, it needs some work.
Because mm-hmm.
she had some other guys doing work in the past, and it was a little sloppy. But I was like, yo, Kim, let's clean it up a little bit. Let me get my work in here. Let's put some more on here to make it like, right, beef it up a little bit. She was like, I don't know, Alan. We already got our budget set. Like, we don't even got no more room on the tour bus. I'm like, I'll sleep on the floor, I don't care. She was like, no, we're not gonna have you sleep on the floor, but we don't have no real room on a tour bus, like, and we don't have enough money to pay you. And I'm like, shit, I'm used to working for free. Like, it's Kim.
Yeah,
I'm like, yo, you don't gotta pay me. She was like, no. I'm like, nah, Kim, for real. She was like, we gotta at least give you per diem. I'm like, now you bargaining for paying me? I'm like, yeah, I'll take per diem. I don't know what per diem is. Now, for those of you who are watching, right? For those of you who are watching, per diem is basically a living cost. Like, yeah, anybody that goes on a road with artists, they get paid a stipend of money, which is just solely so you can take care of yourself. Like, paying for your necessities, like, you know, deodorant, toothpaste, you know, food. You know, the living needs, because you're working. So now they have to give you a per diem to basically take care of yourself while you're on the road, right? So I was like, I don't even know what a per diem is. I found out that day. She was like, look, we can pay you a per diem, but we can't really pay you out every week. I was like, yo, Kim, you don't understand. I'll do this every week for free. She's like, but we don't have no more room on the tour bus. You might have to sleep in the kitchen. I was like, I'll sleep in the kitchen. She said, but we leaving tonight. Would you be able to get your stuff ready in time? An hour later, I had my luggage in my hand, and I told Mom, I'll see you in a few months.
Wow.
Yo, Mom was like, what do you mean a few months? Where you going? I said, yo, I'm going on the road with Kim. She said, on the road with, wait, what? Like, she didn't understand what was happening in the moment, because it was so last minute.
It
was moving so fast, she couldn't even realize what was going on.
Right.
I was like, nah, I got called to go on the road with them. I'm gonna go on tour with Kim. I'm gonna be back in a few months. She's like,
wow.
But where you gonna leave your car? I was like, oh shit, right. Like, I just got a new BMW at the time, like a little M5. I was like, shit. I had my girl drive me to Jersey real quick, and you know, they dropped me off, and yeah, like, she had a whole bus wrapped with her face on it for the Return of the Queen tour.
Wow.
And we went on tour, and we was on the road for like 6 months, like 5 months, and then
she's fine. That's a long time.
Oh, for real.
For real.
How was that experience?
For real. And the whole time you didn't get paid.
No, I did.
I was like, yo, there's no way.
Nah, Kim is a sweetheart. Shout out to little Kim, my sister, man. She's a loving lady. Yeah. Like, she really took care of us. Like, she really is like a mama to the team. Like, she really a queen bee. Like, she really took care of us.
She's
like,
real queen.
She didn't even play me like that. Cause she was gonna just give me per diem, which was like, I think like $150 a week, $200 a week.
Mm-hmm.
But then she was paying me out too. She paid me out $100 a day. And nice. I was like, damn, this is a livable wage. I'm getting $700 a week.
Yeah.
I'm not even mad at this. Like, this is more than I would have made in my regular job. Yeah. I would have got this for 2 weeks of work.
And you're doing what you love.
And I'm doing what I love.
You quit your job.
Yeah,
before you left tour.
Fuck out of here.
You're like, yo, I'm out today. No 2 weeks notice.
You can keep my check.
I'm out of here.
Send it to my mom's.
So you went from working with her, and then you still have Rich Entertainment, right?
Yeah.
What was the next, like?
So, yeah, the next thing. So, I mean, staying on the theme here, you know, recognizing the space you're in.
Yeah, recognizing the space. I love that.
Working with Kim, I got around a lot of artists, and, you know, we went on, it was more than just a tour. Like, we became like family, because, like, after the tour ended, I was just, again, y'all was talking about my personality, and I try to be genuine, and she knows that. And I feel like, you know, with her coming from her last team, there was a lot of trust issues with the people that she was around. Mm. So she just felt that that energy that I had, and she knew she could trust me.
Right.
So it went beyond the tour. From that tour, I worked with her for about 5-6 years.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And
so it wasn't five months.
It was bigger than five months.
Yeah.
5-6 years. And we were on the road all the time at that point. Wow. We were flying out to Dubai, London twice. We went to so many different cities. I can't remember every city we went to.
Yeah, yeah.
But we went, we traveled a lot. And I helped her set up her Instagram. Like, I was her first image on Instagram. Like, and I was just happy to be a part of, like, helping to upgrade this whole entire thing. Cause, like, she was coming into a new time period with this industry.
Everything's going digital.
So, you know, I was happy to be happy to usher it in with her and work with her on doing that. Mm-hmm. So, working with her, I know that we went from working together all the time to, like, you know, she had the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little bit of a year off from working with her, and it made me really take time and analyze things. Like, all right, that space I'm in is cool, but I'm really just relying my livelihood on one person, and this is not safe.
Yeah.
I'm really thinking about settling down soon. I'm thinking about getting a crib soon, and I'm like, I really want some more stability in my life. I don't really know if I want to be on the road all the time, or if I want to be traveling all the time, or if I want to rely on one person to feed me. That's not really how I want to live my life. Like,
yeah, it's not sustainable business.
Not at all. So I really just started thinking, like, damn, I need to change things up. You know, I started thinking about other things I could do. Started making me realize I need to get into other plans of investment. You know, I started looking in stocks and stuff at the time and getting my feet wet in there. And, you know, after she had the baby, we was right back at it. Right back at it again. But I was in it, at it with a different approach. It made me realize I need to look for more opportunities while I'm with her. Because I got comfortable. Like, 6 years of working at that, I started going to different cities and, you know, getting used to this. So I'm becoming one of the cronies like Jim had. Like, I'm smoking in Miami and drinking before the show. I'm not doing no research. I'm not updating my equipment. I'm getting too comfortable.
Yeah.
And well, I remember one day we were at the Fountain Blue in Miami. And I remember, like, we were just on tour with Diddy at the time. We was doing a bunch of touring with him before they did the Bad Boy reunion tour.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were on the road, we were doing a bunch of shows. Like, we did the I Heart Festival in Vegas with him. We was doing a bunch of other shows with him. And he saw me working. Cause he saw me running into the next door to make sure I caught her and Diddy walking in the next door before they got to the door. Like, I was running 5 steps ahead of them to make sure I was catching every step.
Diddy knows a hard worker.
Diddy, you know, he was peeping my moves and seeing how I was working with Kim. And, you know, you get familiar with people now. So, you know, we done went to his house in Miami. We're getting real I'm comfortable at this point. I'm thinking, like, I made it. I'm not going to lie.
He's in the circle.
I'm there. I'm like, I'm in Diddy's crib. We lit. I'm in Diddy. I remember we was in the Fountain Blue chilling before the show at RMC. It was Revo Music Conference. I forgot what year it was. But we was at the Fountain Blue in Miami. And I remember just sitting back with a pina colada. And I'm just sitting in... I'm in the back by the pool watching all his little production guys run around sweating, hoping they don't lose their job. They're going hard as fuck. I'm getting paid just to sit here and drink my pina colada right now. And I'm just cocky as shit. I'd rather me than you. But then I had to look at myself for a minute, like, I'm playing myself. Because then I seen the whole production that night, and I saw that he had his cameras wired to the TV station. And I'm looking at it like, damn, like, my shit's only going to be as big as Kim gets. And I fuck with Kim. But they shit is going to be as big as Diddy gets. And they got opportunities out the ass right now. Because it's more than just tours. They got TV. They got tour. They got the clothing. They got all these elements that's part of Combs Enterprise that they could find an opportunity through. And I'm just stuck with this one. So I had to sit down and humble myself. Like, yeah. You know, after she got pregnant, that reality check stuck with me. You know, I was sipping that pina colada differently. Like,
so it tasted different, right?
It tasted different. It hit different. You know what I'm saying? So it really was a reality check. So I took that moment and it stuck with me. You know what I'm saying? Because I was like, this moment right here is important. I need to hold on to this. Like, next time I got close.
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness for sure. Yeah. Self-awareness. Like, I got close to him one time. We was in a, we was at a video shoot for this song. Oh my God. It was a song with French Montana, and Lil Kim and Puffy, and we were shooting a video in California. And I remember we was on a video shoot, and he was chewing out one of his cameramen. Like, yo, this shit is all wrong. I don't like the way none of this looks. Fix it. I don't know what you need to do, but I need you to fix it. And I said, he's getting chewed out. Like, but I just said, I'm just a fly on the wall. I'm not, you know, I'm just watching it. He was like, you know, I need my shit to look like a movie. I don't know how you're going to make it happen, but I don't care if it's just Instagram. I need this shit to look like a fucking movie. Yeah. And he's just telling him how he wants the shit to look and how he needs to figure it out. So I was like, fuck it, this is my moment. Mm. I'm taking the chance. Mm. I'm like, excuse me, Mr. Combs. I just interrupted his conversation. He was like, what's up, Playboy? I'm like, listen, I overheard your conversation, and I wasn't trying to be nosy, but you know I've been working for Kim, and now knowing that he recognized my hard work, I'm like, hopefully this gives me a little bit of a boost in his eyes to help hear me out for a second. Yeah. So I'm like, Mr. Combs, listen, I'm going to be really quick, because I know you're talking to your employee, but I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm. Recognizing things I learned with Jim, right? Recognizing the things I learned about knowing how I cannot come in there and look for help, but how I can try to help them.
Yeah, add value.
Because I know that's how I'm going to help myself, but I got to help you first. Mm. So I came in there like, Ms. Combs, I know exactly what you're looking for, and I would love to help with that. And he said, all right. I said, listen, I worked on the Thomas Illmatic documentary, which I did. I did some work on the Thomas Illmatic documentary earlier that year with my friend Dave from MTV. And I already knew it was a part of the Tribeca Film Festival. It was, you know, showing theaters. It was getting critically.
And for those who don't know what that is, that's the documentary on Nas.
Mm-hmm. On Nas,
one of the best Tom rappers. Zomatic.
Yeah, I was a producer on it.
Yeah,
major,
bro.
And keep that in mind. I didn't know I was a producer yet, but I'll get back to that. I was just like, you know, I worked on the Thomas O'Matic documentary. You know, it won some awards for the Tribeca Film Festival. I know exactly what you're looking for. I would love to help you. He's like, take his number. Same dude he was chewing out. He was like, yo, take his number. And I was like, I hope he's not trying to replace him with me. It wasn't that at all. He was like the head of his media at the time. His name was Aubrey. And big up to Aubrey. Really good brother of mine.
Aubrey. Yeah. Wow. I did his business card.
Really good brother. Really good brother of mine now to this day. So Aubrey and me and Aubrey became like this. Because as soon as he said, take this brother's number, I called Aubrey like every day. Because I was like, until I get this opportunity locked in, I'm not going nowhere. So Aubrey was like, you know, yo, I'm in LA right now. I can't talk, Alan. I'm like, oh, no problem. I'm going to call you tomorrow. He's like, all right, cool. Tomorrow's better. All right, cool. Tomorrow, not today, too. Don't worry. I'll call you on Monday. Friday's no good. No, Monday. I won't even bother you on the weekend. I'm going to respect your privacy. You got to know you can't give up.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, yo, I called him every day. He didn't hire me right away. Mm. I'm still working with Kim. I'm going on other, you know, working with other artists. I'm filming other artists that come to New York City, like Zoe Dollaz, and I'm taking their footage and saying, yo, let's get this on Revolt. I could send this to Revolt if you want. And I'm just sending it to Aubrey, like, yo, bro, I got some footage from Zoe Dollaz. And he'll be like, yo, thanks for sending that. I'm just trying to help. Because I know this is my only way of me get. You can't help yourself until you help people first sometimes. So, like, I'm sending footage for free, not even asking for money. I'll go to Howard Homecoming. I'm just bumping into everybody I can. I'm filming Wale and Fabulous and all these people. I'm sending mad footage. Revo put mad shit on their air for free that I didn't even get paid for. I didn't want money for it. I just wanted to get in there.
Right.
So I was just sending footage over. And they were just taking it. And they were like, yo, this guy's one of our cameramen now. Because now I'm just one of those guys that's consistently sending things through.
Right.
Not only that, Diddy done told you.
Yeah.
You know, keep him in mind. So it's like, I got two things working for me. So now, after about a year of me saying, yo, Aubrey, what's up? Can I come in? He'll have me come in and say, yeah, man, we don't really got something for you right now. We need you to come back. We need you to come in when things open up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'll be humble and say, all right, cool. It ain't my moment. I'll come back.
Yeah.
So I remember me and Kim got into an argument, and I remember Kim fired me. Yeah. And I took that one on the chin. I was like, I gotta humble myself now. Like, Kim fired me. So now I'm like, dang. Like, now it's like no more side trips on every other weekend. I'm like, I gotta just, you know, I'm not her son. I gotta make it happen. This ain't my mom. Like,
can you take us through what caused that? Or it's a
sometimes we just want change. Yeah. And I don't think that I was changing enough. And I don't think she was happy with what it was anymore. She wanted something different. Okay. And I understand that. Yeah, yeah. It's not going to always fit. Like, sometimes it's fit for the moment, but not for everything. So I respectfully, you know, I accepted what it was. Like, she said, yo, you know, she didn't like the fact that I was always taking it. I was getting comfortable, too. Mm. Like I said, I was getting real comfortable. I was smoking and drinking on the trips, coming out before we went on stage. And I wasn't really... I wasn't overdoing it, but at the end of the day, she wants people that she's paying to be there on a professional.
Right.
And I wasn't on my professional. Even though I was doing, you know, what I had to do, but still, she wants you to show up a certain way. So I know I got so used to us being so close that I forgot this is work. Mm. Like, I was in the hospital when her child was born. Mm. Like, we became really close because you on the road with people all the time. You start getting closer to them than your own family because you're on the road with them all the time.
Right.
So you're not really seeing your family like that. You always with these people. They become your family. You know what I mean? So I felt like I got too comfortable. Mm. And I blame myself for that because it wasn't really her responsibility to keep me up on point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's paying me. I got to do that. So I remember at that point, I called Aubrey and I said, yo, let me get on that tour. The Bad Boy tour, the reunion tour just happened. And she just let me go. So I'm like, damn, like, I missed out on the tour. We're all hyped because now I'm part of the team that's already talking about the tour. Luckily, they had room. I was a part of their promo team. I started doing, like, the pop-up shot footage. Gotcha. Like, I was doing a bunch of work on every city. We was doing the pop-up shops and all the bunch of stuff for, like, the Invisible Bully brand. You know, you know, shout out to the Invisible Bully brand. All in all, that was, like, how I got in with being close to Diddy and being close to the Revolt team. But still in all, after the tour ended, I didn't work for Revolt. I had to keep bothering Aubrey for like another few months.
Really?
So it was like a good 2 years of me staying on him. And then not only that,
consistency,
bro. That summer, I one summer I hit him up and I was just like, you know, I just bought a new drone. I want to come to the office and show it to you. So I come to the office.
With the drone.
Come try to tell him, like, yo, I'm out here. Like, check me out. Look at what I'm doing. I'm invested in myself. You know what I'm saying? Message. No, but I'm invested in myself. I'm like, yo, look, I just bought this new DJI drone. This junk got 4K and all that shit on it. He's like, damn, bro, you ain't playing. He said, yo, let me walk you over to Ramon Duke's office. Ramon Duke's was the president of Revo at the time. And when I tell you Ramon Duke's was a cool brother, he sat down with him, like, Orby said, listen, Alan, I'm moving to LA. I'm going to be working in the LA office. But this brother right here, he's the one you want to talk to. He's the one that gets shit done. He introduced me to the president of Revo at the time. And after that, it was history. Like, I became a part of their team. They brought me in. They recognized that I was a producer and that I edit and I shoot. And I came in there and I shut shit down. I broke records in there. You know, I broke the YouTube record in my first year there.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you say broke a record, what do you mean?
So streams. When it comes to like their original content that they developed there, I'm not proud of it because I'm not really proud of who Tekashi is as a person. But I know that working there, I did a project, you know, we did some original content with Tekashi. That broke their original recording records in the first year there. So, like, outside of, like, other promoted content, like artists, music videos and stuff like that, originally recorded stuff that they produced in-house, I basically went up to, like, the number one viewed content on their YouTube page.
Got it.
In the first year there.
So you're like the top content creator.
Yeah, man. From there, it just became a different level.
I ended up working for Diddy on a different side, right? Yeah. Like, I was doing the business cards and printing for all the companies, right? Yeah.
And we were doing the chefing and all the catering. Yeah.
Get out of here!
Yeah, you're doing a show
in the office.
We did them in the office.
Yeah. Get out of here!
We did the photo shoots, the one with Jussie Smollett. He did with Sean John, with Carmelo and LeBron's kids.
Yeah,
yeah, we did a couple of the photo shoots.
Yo, that's
that they
awesome.
Had.
Man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So
we all
shout to Diddy, man.
Shout out to young black man, big opportunity.
Combs Enterprises,
big up for Combs Enterprise.
Yeah, Combs Enterprise.
Definitely showed a lot of love.
You know, I love your story because it's like, it took you 2 years to get in. This guy's on like a private jet. I don't know if it was.
Oh.
But it, you know, I don't know what setting that was.
Yeah.
But I see this guy sitting
about to make me cry.
In a plane or wherever. Were you in a plane?
We was in a Sprinter van.
Oh, that was a van. It looked like a
tour bus.
Like, how was that experience?
Shit. That shit was legendary, man. Like, shit.
Because it was a loss, man.
Now, I really, like, I used to fuck with Nipsey, man. Like, I used to really.
This was, like, right before everything took
place. Right before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Right before he died. This is, like, right before he died. Like, I was a fan. I'm about to cry. What the fuck is wrong with me? I'm being so fucking emo.
I came out of nowhere, man.
I'm being emo right now. Crazy. That shit was really emotional, bro.
Like an inspiration for me.
Like, I used to really champion homie hard at Revo. And it used to bother me that they didn't get the vision.
Wow.
Because I used to go so hard, like, yo, bro, he's talking about what we need to hear. He's talking about self-ownership. Mm-hmm. He's talking about self-investment. He's talking about just being your own man. Talking about just being genuine. Everything I stood on was like, he was talking to my soul.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, I really just felt his energy.
Yeah.
So when I went to Revo, I remember, swear to God, I would start every morning off, because we used to be in the vibe there playing music in our desk and shit. So me and, I can't front, me and Dino always bump heads, but me and him both used to get along when it come to Nipsey. Like, I would be in there playing Nipsey every day, because it was just like my motivation to get through the day.
Victory Lap?
Before Victory Lap. I used to be in there bumping, like, I used to be bumping all his mixtapes. Yeah. I'm bumping everything from the beginning to end. Like, I used to be a fan. So it was like, I was in there every day bumping his music. And I used to even hit his team up, like, yo, whenever y'all come to New York, I need to do this interview because I'm trying to make this shit legendary.
Yeah.
And I already had a reputation in the network for doing dope shit because, like, I was really getting close to president of the company at the time, Ramon. And everybody used to just really, you know, like, we were making moves quickly in there. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I remember, like, Nipsey came to New York City and I had hit his team up, like, yo, knowing that I have a relationship with Sam already, knowing that we already have some of the chemistry, I'm like, I have to do this when he comes up here. So they robbed me of it because it was about a clout shit, you know? I'm saying, like, somebody in the LA office hated because I had put him to the schedule, and everybody was like, yeah, Nipsey Hussle is on the schedule today. Somebody in programming on the West was like, nah, he's scheduled for next week. I'm like, what are you talking about? Victory Lap's dropping this week. Why are we not doing it right now? They was like, no, because we already have him on schedule. We're not going to interrupt his plans to make him come to the studio today when we already have a schedule for him on the West Coast office. And I'm like, it was just about power at the time. They didn't really care about the fact that it was going to be a week later.
Yeah.
They just wanted him to come to the office because they wanted the credit of bringing Nipsey Hussle in. Meanwhile, me and Sam and his team got a relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about pulling them in. And I was already used to, like, trying to hit them up with other opportunities. My homegirl Danielle's cool with their team. Like, we already sort of had a little bit of a rapport. So, like, you know, a year later, I used to work, you know, after I left Revolt, I ended up working with a platform called LiveX Live, which is a digital platform. They actually have a $1 million deal, something like that, with a Tesla, where they're like the main company in the Teslas, almost like how you have like a, in the Fords, what do you call the radio? Sirius Radio, Sirius, right? You got Sirius Radio in most trucks. LiveX Live was like the digital platform for Tesla because, you know, they had to have visual aspects because they had that whole iPad setup. So they needed like a company that had like media included.
Mm.
So we was working with this company and we was helping to start up. Like, we was helping them get the content off. So I remember, like, I was like, cool, you know, Shaheem Reed, another legendary journalist. Me and him, you know, were working on this interview for Nipsey while they were having a whole rollout for Rolling Loud in L.A. So a few months before he died, you know, I finally, you know, got to do my interview that I got robbed of at Revo. And it felt special to me because I was like, this is supposed to happen.
Mm.
It's supposed to be happening. And it's just the fact that even like me linking up with people on Puff's team to try to get in with Nipsey before they even A&R'd. Like, they A&R'd the whole, you know, Puff had a big part to do with the Victory Lap album.
Mm.
But it's just like me being on the team. A lot of the influence on our team came from me just being on the team. Like, I was the one championing Nipsey from day one. So it was like, I'm not taking credit for Puff and them working together, because again, I'm pretty sure his influence was seeing for itself. But as far as our company goes, I was one of the loudest voices when it came to championing Nipsey before people really caught on to who he was. So it felt special when I got the chance to sit down and finally produce something with him. And we did it. You know, we sat down. We chilled for a minute. We smoked together. We chopped it up. And we did an interview with him. Like, we did an interview and we talked about all the shit he was doing in L.A. at the time. Even off camera, the conversations we had was so dope because he had just closed the deal on that strip mall.
Yeah.
So that week, he had literally just signed a deal to finally buy the strip mall where the Victory Lap store was at.
Wow.
So it was a big moment because he was like, you know.
I know he was excited.
Excited, man. He just got nominated for the fucking Grammy.
Yeah.
He got the closing on this fucking strip mall, and I'm just listening to him talk about these things that he was rapping about doing one day, and all this shit, even off camera, that he was talking about. Like, it was special. It was special, man. And it was just like, you know, he knew how much I was fucking with him, and he was like, yo, player, you know, my man Charles, too. My man Charles, who did the interview with me, he's another producer that I worked with. He was from L.A. He was already in tune with the work that Nipsey's done, and he's already, like, you know, seeing the changes that's happened over there. Like, he was talking about the whole shift in the community being, like, gentrified over there and how we can protect that. Being someone that's been championing Nipsey's music for years and not getting, like, getting the weird faces when people would hear me talk about him, because, like, a lot of my friends, and it's no knock to them, but they would hit me up after the fact, like, now we see what you was talking about. It's like, so many times we get our roses after the fact, and it's like, it's but so many people that understand the beauty of it in the moment. Right. And I was one of those people that in the moment already knew how beautiful it was that he was painting these pictures for us and how valuable they would be for us one day. You know, so it's like recognizing it and not only seeing a rapper talk about it, but do it.
Right.
It was something that really resonated for all of us.
Right.
You know what I mean? So for me, I didn't care about clout or none of that shit. I just was happy that me and his team had a rapport, because I was happy to go ahead and try to help, you know, pull anything in on their end from my end. You know what I mean? Working with Puff, you know, working with Revolt, I was happy to try to combine our worlds in some way. So after leaving Revolt and seeing that, you know, my moment to produce something with him got robbed, I was happy to go ahead and produce something with him at the next stage, you know, and even having that respect given back, because he, you know, his spirit was just so welcoming. You know, he already knew what it was when we got there. You know what I mean? So it's like the way that we had conversations about this building in our community, we was like, yo, what would be advice you would give for people in these communities where they're building, like, the monorail or that train station, that train that Elon Musk was building in LA, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about it off camera. He was just like, listen, my man Charles asked the question. And he's like, listen, if you really, you know, if you're worried about gentrification happening in your neighborhoods, then you can't really be mad at people who saw the value in it if you didn't see the value in it. Because if you're not putting the stores in the neighborhood now, if you're not trying to build up the neighborhood now, don't get mad when somebody else comes in and tries to do it. Even though it might not be fair or they might take advantage of it, still, we be having these opportunities to do it and we'll leave.
Right.
And we don't ever try to throw it back. And one of those things that he did was stick to his word. He really tried to, you know, he developed that center out there, the technology center that he was built, that he did out there, the hub, the hub he built in L.A.
This guy, David Gross, him and David, that's the one he did together with him.
Correct. Then you talk about that whole entire purchase of that Marathon store. Went from hustling in front of the swap meet to buying the swap meet, making it into Victory Lap store, to buying the whole damn shopping center. That's not a story for
that's
you.
That's a story, bro.
Bro. Inspiration
in your own neighborhood.
It's so important to be visible. Like, one of the things I always loved about producing is being behind the scenes, but then I had to realize I can't be behind the scenes forever, because people can't validate what you say or what you do unless they can see it. So I have to be visible, and I know, like, you know, I'm happy to do stuff like this, because telling these stories, hopefully it don't reach everybody, but it might reach somebody, and the people that need to hear it gonna gravitate to it.
It'll inspire someone.